right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. How are you doing this week, buddy?
Oh my gosh. What else is there to say? I mean, after this past Thursday's game, really, what is there to say? I mean, I'm doing fine. Yes, internally, health is great, all that wonderful stuff, blah, blah, blah. But I tell you, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and I just have no idea how much of it's going to be positive. Okay. And that's unfortunate, too, because, you know, I think you and I, we both had a vision for this podcast of it being a, you know, a positive force for the Alouettes. And unfortunately, they're really not giving us a whole lot to work with here.
No, there actually was one positive thing that came through this game, and it was
the final whistle.
No. Well, maybe. I know if it was anything, it would have been Farah, if anything, because we actually had a field goal kicker who could kick field goals.
Oh my goodness!
And the other positive thing is he was all the scoring.
That's true.
And I mean, almost won the game by himself. Almost.
Yeah, he did. It really became a kicker's duel. Actually, like both he and former Alouette Sean White were pretty much the only ones putting up points, aside from Mike Riley's touchdown, which was a little suspect, but it is what it is. But yeah, Anthony Farah was absolutely fantastic in his Alouettes debut. And if I'm Boris Bede, I'm starting to break a sweat a little bit here.
Yes. Now, we usually will, you know what? Let's change things up a bit. Okay, I want you to start. I know you said there's some negative stuff. What's the first thing we're going to talk about tonight?
Well, I mean, if you haven't been living under a rock these past few days, the Montreal Alouettes did lose the game in Edmonton by a final score of 23-12.
Stunning fashion.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to lose with gusto, and that's exactly what they did. I mean, like I said, it was a kicker's duel for the better part of this game. Montreal just kept hanging around. Mm-hmm. The defense was playing outstanding football.
Yes. Okay, there's the other positive.
That's true. Yes, all things considered, they kept this Edmonton Eskimos team pretty honest. I mean, you talk about Darrell Walker and Adarius Bowman, two of the better receivers in this league. And yeah, they both got over 100 yards in this game, but no touchdowns on the board.
Wasn't it Walker's third game over 130 yards versus the Owls, I think, in the last three, if I remember correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what they said?
Yep. So the fact that they were able to keep these guys off the score sheet, definitely a positive. Definitely, if you're looking for a moral victory, that's it right there.
Mm-hmm. True. What's going on? What went wrong? I mean, it's
what went
do
wrong.
We have to, does that have to come down to saying Kevin Glenn? I mean, an anemic offense. His numbers were fair. His numbers were fair. I mean, 22 of 39, 271. But the thing is, no touchdowns. And not one, but two picks, all within, what was the span of 2 minutes?
If that. And that's just the thing. And this was towards the end of the game when you're trying to win, or at least do something. Like, I mean, Montreal was down by four, so they had no choice. They had to go for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. They had to march down the field and score the major. And again, you have that hope that Kevin Glenn, he's been there a billion times. He knows what needs to be done. And you just hope that, you know, you're going to get the right play call. You're going to get the right, the right rhythm with your receivers, or just, you know, finding the way to move the ball down the field, move the chains. And Glenn was looking so good. Like I said, he found BJ Cunningham. He found Nick Lewis. God help us, he found Sam Jaeger a few times. I mean, yeah. It's.
Well, BJ, there's another positive. At least we have to bring up something. There's another positive in BJ Cunningham.
Yeah, BJ Cunningham, this was, I mean, he's been playing some outstanding football as of late, but I mean, this was definitely, if there was only one positive that you had to take from this game, it was the play of BJ Cunningham. I mean, this guy has superstar written all over him, and it sounds awful to say, but SJ Green getting hurt was the best thing that could ever happen to BJ Cunningham.
Well, it's funny. Well, I think it's SJ and Kenny Stafford. unfortunately, we had to say that. That those are, you know, really the two big names next to Jerron Carter, who was kind of off this week. But once Kenny Stafford comes off this off the sixth game, it looks promising. It really does. You know, Sam Ejegeare is underutilized.
I'd say misused. So than under.
Okay.
Look, the guy is lightning fast on his feet.
Can't forget Nick Lewis, monster man. Oh, I love that boy.
I'm telling you, that guy. I'm telling you right now, and I mean, unless something catastrophic happens to him, I truly see him as the Montreal Alouettes representative for most outstanding player in 2016. I know it's still early. I know it's like only a third of the season's gone, but the way that Nick has carried himself, mm-hmm. both on and off the field, he is truly been the most outstanding player for the Montreal Alouettes.
Right. And most likely, if anybody did watch the game, the biggest turning point would have been in the fourth quarter. Montreal has the ball. You know, it's first down and 10 at the Edmonton 30, 1:24 left on the clock. Kevin Glenn throws a pick, but it just wasn't any pick. You know, it was intercepted by Charette. Went down to the Edmonton 25-yard line, but then he fumbled the ball. It was poked out by – who was it poked out by?
It was by Corbin Laux.
And it wasn't a poke. It was one of those plays that football coaches always want you to continue practicing, and as a wide receiver, they don't want you to get caught with. It wasn't a wide receiver that did it. You got the ball punched out.
Oh, not just a punch. It was an uppercut. It was a Lennox Lewis uppercut right there.
Yeah.
Shades of Mike Tyson, even.
but then it was knocked out of bounds by Rutley at the Montreal six. So from there, it was over because you started on the six, and there was 1:05 left on the clock. Now, the Alouettes have come back from it wasn't that far a distance. I'm trying to remember. It was who did it? It was versus BC. It was at home.
Tanner Marsh?
It was Tanner Marsh.
Danny Marsh to Eric Delorier, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's been done, but the way that how anemic the offense was going, it really wasn't gonna matter. Now the other negative, if there really was one, another one that you can bring up, it would have been their time of possession in the first quarter,
or lack thereof.
I don't think I've ever seen the Alouettes have such a not have the ball. I mean, dude, they had the ball for a grand total of, get this, 2 minutes and 53 seconds.
I actually made the joke on Twitter about, with it being Throwback Thursday, it's quite possible they may have just invited Troy Smith back to be the quarterback for the Alouettes. Because, this was two and out. Nothing. Either Kevin Glenn was overthrowing his receivers or underthrowing them, or, again, hand it off and get maybe 2 yards on the ground. Like, you're not going to win football games doing that. You're not going to threaten anybody with that sort of offense. It was bland. It was boring. It was unimaginative. It was an Anthony Calvillo-esque offense, which is, again, I'm sorry to say, this is where we're at right now. This is the hand we're dealt, and I just don't see any change happening.
They got the ball twice in that quarter. Twice. The game – now. The game could have been a lot worse after the first quarter instead of it just being 8-0. I mean, the other positive we're talking about, positive with the defense, being able to, for the defense to be able to stop Edmonton twice basically on the goal line due to fumbles, you know, heads up by Chip Cox, who got the second one. Was it the second one or the first one?
He got the first one. It was Marc-Olivier Brier who got the second
one. That's right. So, again, it could have been a lot worse. Sometimes I'm just left so speechless. This is the type of game that, you know, the last interception, the first interception in the fourth quarter, it was one of those punch some furniture type of deals, and that's what I did. But no, I'm not an angry man.
But I tell you, this team, it can bring out the worst in you. And, yeah, I'm sure you're not the only one who is just frustrated at this. You know, you develop a – you know, you try to develop some sort of rhythm. You try to – bring some hope into the game. You want to be able to look at your quarterback and say, okay, we're down by four. We've got less than 2 minutes to go. What are you going to do? And you want to have hope that they've got like a 2-minute drill down to march themselves down the field and do what they can. If not to tie the game, then at least or if not to go ahead, at least try and tie the game. Like I said, down by four, you have no choice. You have to go for the touchdown. So there's no question. Like, a field goal is not going to cut it. You got to go for the TD. And again, with all this experience, with all the games he's played, the big games he's played in his career, you think Kevin Glenn just alone would have some sort of, just a set pattern, something that would say, okay, I know how to get this team downfield. I know what it's going to take to win. Let me go work my plan. And nothing. I mean, yeah, he had a couple of nice throws. So he was able to move the ball a little bit. But then sure enough, Kevin Glenn just had that bad luck that seems to have struck him in places like in Winnipeg and Hamilton, BC, any other places that he's played. I mean, he's just been snake bitten more often than not. And this is why people like to ride him a little bit, because, yeah, he's a perennial backup. He's
a 500 quarterback. He's 93-93-1 now in his career.
Yep. And, yeah, numbers don't lie. I mean, that's it. Yes, he's won a lot of games, but, man, he's lost a lot of games.
Yes. Let's try to look at some of the positives before we move on. Obviously, things need to be done. But the question is what? And it's only so much that we can say this, that it just seems that if it's not one thing one week, it's something the next. And it always seems to be the you know, what ails the Owls that particular week. So, again, a lot of positive, you know, a lot of positive, but they all have to come together. You know, we see the Owls, you know, a lot of intensity at camp, at practice today. Good, good. You know, I know we're just frustrated with the team, Cliff, and we can only blame the players so much. What else can be done? You know, again, great games by BJ Cunningham. I think that was his coming out game. I think you call it his coming out season. Really, it's just because he's had the ability to take advantage of the choices of the, not the choices, but of the of what he's been given. So yeah, I don't know. Remember last week I said that they were going to go 1-1, and I really thought in those next two games, and I really thought they'd have a chance, that the one would have been the Edmonton next week coming up first, and we'll talk about it later, versus Ottawa is gonna be a lot harder.
It's definitely going to be a tough road to hoe, that's for sure. And I was with you too. I thought, okay, 1-1 is not impossible. And yeah, going into Ottawa would definitely be tough. Going into Edmonton, how tough could it be, considering that the Eskimos were going through a three-game losing skid? And yeah, it was going to end sooner or later, and it was a very good chance it was going to end against Montreal. But based on what I had seen the past couple of weeks, like, I mean, yeah, this is a decent enough team, the Edmonton Eskimos. But I mean, Montreal, like I said, throughout the game, they hung with these guys. And Edmonton, I felt, tried giving the game away numerous times to Montreal. And for whatever reason, Montreal was just like, no, 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 this is your game. This is all you guys. And it's frustrating. There's you said it best. It's frustrating, especially for fans of this team, because they're not accustomed to losing football. And that's what it's been like now for the past couple of years. And it's become even more prevalent this season, especially when you consider, again, from the coaching staff all the way down to the injuries we've been having, the play calling, you name it, any number of reasons why this team is where it is. And yeah, there's no quick fix. And that's the thing we're going to have to bitterly accept. It's a tough pill to swallow, but at the end of the day, this is what it's come down to, is this is our lot in life right now. I mean, it's going to take more than just one player to step up and change everything around. And I mean,
I'm just worried going forward what the attendance is going to be like at the next home game.
Well, it's a Friday night game, so I mean, those tend to be a little bit better, but yeah. even then too, I mean, what's the big promotion going to be? Make some noise night?
They're trying. No, to be fair, the team is trying. I can't fault I can't fault them for trying something new this year, to have something every game. I mean, yeah, sure. I'm sure all of us would have loved to have had a bobblehead night or something like that, but then again, this is a team that, you know, on a wear white night, you have to buy the shirts. Anyways, that's for something else. But let's go try to work on some pods before we switch gears here. You were talking before we were to the start of the show, you were talking specifically about defense and how well they're doing, considering all the challenges that they've had this season.
Absolutely. And big time props to this Alouette secondary. These young guys, they're coming to play. I mean, it hasn't been perfect. They've definitely made rookie mistakes, as rookies tend to do. But guys like Ethan Davis, Jonathan Mincy, Greg Henderson, who made his debut, his official CFL debut this past Thursday, mm-hmm. replacing Billy Parker, who's on the injured list. These guys came out and, yeah, despite their rookie mistakes that they've made, they were burned a couple of times. A couple of times they were just a little too aggressive and the linen comes flying. These things are going to happen. We just have to accept it. And even Joe Von Johnson, like I said, he's been playing great, but he got hurt also on Thursday.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
And going in for him was Ramon Taylor. And I tell you, this kid came out of nowhere. And he played a very solid game in Johnson's absence. Now, mind you, Jovan wasn't injured for very long. Like he just had a bit of a shakeup. So it just, you know, had to take a little bit of time. We went back to the dressing room to make sure everything was good. And he was back on the field, too, after a few series. But in his absence, Ramon Taylor was just a really solid addition. Like, I was really impressed with both Taylor and I've been impressed all season with Jonathan Mincy. Again, replacing a Dominique Ellis or a Mitchell White is definitely not easy.
Right.
But you look at these two kids right there, and again, even Henderson, like, he had a couple of really bad penalties in that very first preseason game versus Winnipeg, and I thought, oh, this guy's done. And he's cut. And I don't know. This coaching staff saw something that we didn't and decided to keep him around. He spent the first part of the season on the practice roster, but now with Parker's absence, as long as he stays absent, because now it looks like Billy's not going to be playing this Friday in Ottawa.
Yep.
So Henderson's back in again. So again, this is another chance for him to shine, to really prove that, hey, I do belong on this team. Give me a chance and I'll make it happen. And that's pretty much what it is with the Alouettes, is it's next man up. I mean, people are going to get hurt. People are going to get cut for salary reasons, it seems. There's any number of reasons why player A won't be in the lineup. So player B, when his number is called, he better be ready. And true to their word, these kids, they prove that they belong in the discussion. And like I said, my hat's off to them. They played a solid, outstanding game, and they're part of the reason why, of the points that Edmonton was able to score on their own, not as a result of turnovers, there's very few that they were able to score against this Montreal defense. So credit to these guys. I mean, the secondary, it's one of those areas where you got to be absolutely fantastic, especially against a quarterback like Mike Riley. This is a guy that will shred you if you give him the chance. And again, especially with Darrell, like I said, Darrell Walker, Darius Bowman, you put those guys together with Riley, and I mean, that's a scary combination right there. But they kept him honest. And like I said, my hat's off to these young guns, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do against Ottawa, which, again, a very high-powered offense, and they've also got some really talented receivers as well.
Yeah, but
so,
going up against a different quarterback. Well, I said they're going up against a different quarterback, but as the last game. But no, it's true. I think the only – again, they did an outstanding job considering that the holes that have had to be filled this year and even, you know, trying to replace a Billy Parker. You know, at first didn't look so hot, but in the end – you know, didn't get enough pressure to get, you know, get Riley. We only sacked him. We didn't sack him at all, did we?
No, actually.
Yeah, we didn't sack him at all. But I still think the big thing is, and it just seems to be a thing in the CFL this year, besides all these quirky little things that are popping up from time to time this season, is penalties. Once again. 12 of them, 12 penalties again. For 132 yards.
And that, again, it comes down to discipline. And what else can you say? I mean, penalties are a part of the game, and they're certainly a part of Montreal's game, whether we like it or not. So we can always say over and over again, these guys have to stay disciplined. And that's on the coaches as well. I mean, it's the players have to be accountable, and the coaches have to be accountable. At the end of the day, you know the referees are going to watch. You know they've got trigger fingers when it comes to their orange linen. So don't give them any incentive to throw the flag. I want to say it's not that hard, but at the same time, play the game hard, play it fast, play it strong. Just be careful out there. Like you know the refs are watching every single move now. You've got 10,000 cameras watching from every different angle. You know someone's keeping their eyes on you, so don't give them any incentive to throw a flag on you.
What I think is funny is that we're going to be playing Ottawa this week, and they are still the league leader and most penalized team this year. The Owls are not. They're still second by one. by one. So far through through eight total weeks of the CFL season, seven games for the Owls. It's 25 offensive penalties, Cliff. 33 defensive penalties. And special teams combined is 30. Special teams combined is 30. I think it's on when they're receiving. I still don't know what the terminology is here. And guys, if you know STC and STR, I think special teams receiving and special teams something. I know it's been mentioned before. But either way, for 833 yards.
That's almost nine football fields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And luckily, we've had 12 other penalties that were called against us, but 12 were declined. So we have actually had 100 called against us, which is the league lead.
And that's it. Like I said, the Montreal team's the target because they know the referees, they see what's happening. And they know that Montreal is not disciplined at all, mm-hmm. or at least not very disciplined. So, again, this is something that comes back not just on the players, but the coaches as well. Guys like Noel Thorpe, Anwar Stewart, Greg Quick. I mean, these are really good coaches. These are guys that should be stressing the importance of discipline. And, yeah, they're going to very, very much encourage you to play hard and play very powerful out there. But at the same time, don't be making stupid mistakes. And there's nothing frustrating. I mean, it really does temper the enjoyment of watching a football game. And I'll say this about other teams as well, is that every single play, the first thing you're thinking of is, where's the flag? Mm-hmm. That just takes everything away. And it's really unfortunate because we've got a pretty exciting product out there, all things considered.
Right.
And it's just being sullied with these stupid penalties. And like I said, maybe the refs are a little trigger happy when it comes to those. It's very possible. Maybe they're trying to call things that aren't necessarily there because Lord knows we've seen enough coaching challenges as well just to sort of keep them on their toes. But I think a lot of it, especially when it comes to Montreal, is the discipline. And it's one of those things that if it's not going to come from the coaches, then it has to come from the players themselves. They've really got to internalize with that. And I really, truly hope they find a way to keep it to a minimum. I mean, 12 penalties a game, 13 penalties a game. It's disheartening.
Yeah, they're averaging 12.6 a game.
And again, like I said, you can't not have penalties. It's impossible, practically. I don't think I've ever seen
it. Yeah, but if you can keep it under 10, I mean, if you look at the other teams in the CFL, Calgary, Toronto, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, BC, and Hamilton, all are averaging under 10.
There you go. And
Calgary is the least penalized in the league with 53.
Well, and again, at the end of the day, you look at Ottawa, one of the better teams in the league, they can sort of justify it. Montreal, not one of the better teams in this league.
Right.
They can't justify it.
Right. Now, you had, and a few people are yapping. A few people are yapping, whether it be fans, the news, or whatnot. But what is your opinion now on, you know, we love him to death here in Montreal, but when it comes to Anthony Calvillo's being our OC, is everybody souring on AC just because of how the offense is going? Or is it a combination of how the offense is, what he's calling, and how the team, the offense is performing or going out to do it? Or is it just something that the fans just need to chill out about and say, you know what, it's not AC who's underperforming, it's the team who's underperforming completely?
Well, and again, I go back to the example of the previous offensive coordinators we've had since Scott Milanovich. These guys would get raked over the coals, and rightly so. Fans aren't stupid. They know what's going on. They see when you give them this pathetic excuse of an offense. Yeah, you got guys like Turk Schonert, Mike Miller, Ryan Dinwiddie. Like, these guys were just lambasted for their pedantic efforts.
Whoa, 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 Cliffy. Whoa, 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 whoa. Watch with those big words out of the dictionary, man. Stop. Careful.
I'm sorry.
Careful.
They were bad. Real bad. But again, and the fans were just merciless against these guys. And you know what? But all of a sudden, AC comes on board and he's untouchable now? I'm sorry. That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. You know what? If someone's a success and they've worked for it, absolutely. They deserve all the accolades. Mm-hmm. If they make mistakes, yeah, it's okay to call them out on the carpet and say, yo, you're not doing your job. Do your job. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's so tough because we're put in this tough position of having to criticize and even call out one of the most prolific players that this league has ever seen, never mind the city of Montreal. Like, I mean, Anthony Calvillo is one of us. He is a Montrealer now through and through. He is very much a part of the fabric of the city. And for him to be offering this up, I mean, he's got, and again, another thing too, he's also got Jacques Chaplin, one of the most offensively gifted minds in the coaching ranks of the CFL. And you're telling me that these two guys, a Hall of Fame quarterback and a well-decorated coach, can't figure out a freaking offense? I'm sorry. I call BS on that one.
Okay, it goes to my point too, what I was saying before. Is it them? Is it them and the team combined? Or is it the team that's just not getting it?
Well, at the end of the day, the team doesn't call the plays. It's the coaches that call the plays. Mm-hmm. Now, if players can't execute, then it goes back to what Jim Pop said in his tirade. I'll find someone who does. If you can't play, I'll find someone who is willing to play. Mm. So, and again, how many times have we talked about how much talent is on this team? The receivers, the running backs, the quarterbacks even. Like, this is a team. These aren't just a bunch of scrubs. These aren't all just rookies and no names from Palookaville. We've got honest to goodness talent. We've got Grey Cup winning players on this team, for crying out loud. Hell, mm-hmm. We got a guy who won a Grey Cup last year. Now, mind you, he's injured, but still, this is a part of that team. So you can't tell me we don't have talent on this team. So, I mean, yes, they've got to shoulder a fair bit of the blame as well. And the coaches can only do so much. All they can do is come up with the plays and hope that the players can execute them. So if they're not executing, then yeah, the players definitely have to take some of the blame as well. Mm-hmm. But it goes both ways. So I guess to answer your question, I'd say it's a complete team effort, not just the players, but the coaches as well. But it's got to start somewhere. And at the end of the day,
you mean a complete team disservice?
Precisely.
The way we're talking, it can't be an effort.
Oh, effort's a very subjective term, I suppose.
Okay, but. And I'm sure we can sit people saying, "Well, you know what, Tim, Cliff, you've never played football." It's true, and it can be hard. You know, it's very easy to be a Monday morning quarterback and just bitching about a team. We get it. We know it's hard. We talk to players. You've done some more so than I have, Cliff, talking to the players after the games. You know, it's just as frustrating for them. Look what just happened a couple of weeks ago with Nick Lewis and his tirade.
Absolutely. And you know what? He wasn't wrong. That's the sad part, is that everything he said was the absolute truth. And you can, you know, threaten to fine. You can fine him. You can try to bury his comments. You can do whatever it takes so that he doesn't open his yap anymore. And, well, first of all, good luck with that. But second of all, I mean, if what he's saying is true, I mean, and it's clear as day that there was actually a lot to what he had said. And we're just seeing it over and over and over again. And it's got to start somewhere. I mean, at this point, can we continue like this and just hope and pray that we might luck into a couple of victories and maybe kind of squeak into the playoffs because the other teams are kind of iffy at best as well? No, we can't do that. That's not Alouettes football to me. And I guess that's what's more disappointing to me than anything else, is the fact that this is what's become the new norm in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to be considered a sideshow or a laughing stock because of certain personnel that was brought in over the past couple of years. We've gone past that. I think I want to truly believe that this team has learned its lesson when it comes to, you know, the circus atmosphere. But at the end of the day, if you don't have that, then you've got, the only thing that's left is football. So if you're not playing the kind of football that we have come to expect as fans of this team for 20 years that this team has been back now in Montreal, and we're not accustomed to losing. I mean, some teams are accustomed to losing, and it's just how it is. Montreal is not accustomed to losing at anything, especially when it comes to football, especially when you consider the success this league is, we've had in this league. It's just something that's not going to sit well with people, and it's eventually going to translate into disinterest, apathy, and, like you said, potentially lower attendance numbers, because again, nobody wants to support a loser, and again, Montrealers want winners. Well, and this team has the potential to do that.
They won't support a loser unless you're the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, and again, that's very much an exception. I mean, the Canadiens could go 0-82, and people will still buy tickets. The Montreal Alouettes don't have that luxury. They win two Grey Cups in a row, and they're still having trouble getting season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of things. That's just how it is here in Montreal. So if you keep posting up these 9 and 9 seasons, or, you know, 6 and 12 seasons, and that's where it's looking like it's going right now. I mean, unless we see some sort of gigantic shift in attitude and potentially even in coaching as well.
The previous three seasons for the Isle of Wight at this time have been 1 and 6, 2 and 5, and 2 and 5. This isn't what we're used to seeing.
Well, maybe it is, because what's one common denominator in all this? Awesome defense, terrible offense.
Right.
And just because we have arguably the greatest quarterback this league has ever seen calling the plays, he's untouchable now? No. And I'm sorry. So I don't blame these fans now. They're finally starting to see, you know, the wool's been pulled out from under, pulled away from them.
Yeah.
You pulled aside the curtain. We now see the Wizard of Oz right there. And you know what? Maybe, and again, this is not Anthony Calvillo's fault, because I'm sure he would have been more than happy.
Do not pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Do not pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
And this is what it's come down to, is that everybody who thought, oh, well, this team's going to be okay because AC is calling the shots. Well, guess what? This team is not okay because AC is calling the shots. We can't blame AC for it, because guess what? He's still a rookie when it comes to coaching. Mm-hmm. And anyone who thought otherwise, anyone who deluded themselves into thinking that, well, guess what? You reap what you sow. And now this is where we're at. Unfortunately, as an offensive coordinator, Anthony Calvillo is no better than what Ryan did, what he was, than Mike Miller, or, God help me, Turk Shonert. Yeah. That's just the way it is. This isn't Scott Milanovic 2.0. This isn't Mark Trestman. It's not. I'm sorry. Can Calvillo get there one of these days? Gosh, I really hope so, but at the rate things are going with this team, I'm not liking the odds.
Yeah. You're talking about Sideshow. That was actually a very perfect segue. For just real quick, what are your comments on the whole Jim Popp tirade to the team after the last, not the Edmonton game, but the game prior to that, and the comments that he made that were leaked, I guess we could say, to the Montreal media?
Well, you can see he's frustrated, and I don't blame him. I'd be frustrated too with what's in front of me. He, like I said, he's got to know too that he's got the talent. He's got to know that this is a team that has all potential in the world to be one of the very best in this league, and it's just not happening. Mm-hmm. But for him to come out and just go off half cocked like that is one of those things you got to be very, very careful in doing. This is one thing I've learned in my life, is that especially nowadays in 2016, you can't just go, you know, flying off the handle at people and expect to be A, taken seriously, or B, respected as a result. Like, right. No, I guarantee. And it was pretty clear, because a few players stepped up and said, whoa, why don't you clarify what you're saying here? And actually called Pop back out on the carpet, because they want to know what they mean exactly when it comes to these comments. So again, just kind of like Henry Burris going off, on the CFL and TSN panelists, you want to believe that maybe he's has, you know, once he's had a chance to sort of cool down a little bit, maybe look back and say, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But, mm-hmm. I mean, again, the thing is, you can't unbreak the glass, right?
No.
So now at this point, I have to believe, especially too, based off of the game that we just saw, I don't think the faith is there in him anymore. And I'm starting to think that the longer he stays on as head coach, even if he's trying to steady the situation or however he wants to spin it, it's just going to end up tarnishing everything that he's done for this team, and he's just going to be run out of here. And at what point, I don't know. I don't know what the breaking point is for the Wettenhall family, as far as, you know, at what point do we let Jim Popp go? Because yes, we got to keep him as general manager, because again, he's still one of the best, and I think that's a lot of this is he's spread way too thin. And if it comes down to the point where, like, well, if you want me as GM, you got to keep me as coach. Well, then at that point, he's definitely going to be shown the door. Mm-hmm. But will the Wettenhall family truly decide that? Will they really, if push comes to shove, do they have it in them to let Jim go? And it's hard to say with certainty whether they can or whether they should. It's and at the end of the day, it still all comes back down to the fact that, do these players want to play for Pop as head coach?
Right.
Would they be better off if you took one of the other coordinators and on an interim basis installed them as head coach and see where the season goes, and whatever happens, happens? Because like I said, it's it's such a tough road right now, and like I said, the faith is wavering big time.
I think there probably needs to be a major house cleaning of some sort. I don't want to harp on this because we mentioned it already. We've already mentioned this a couple of weeks. Yeah, basically, I think a couple of weeks in a row, so we don't really need to harp on it. But I think there needs to be a change of head coach. I will leave it at that. And let's talk about the other circus. Let's talk about the other circus in the CFL. What haven't we talked about in the CFL? Well, Chris Jones. Some people are calling. I don't know what they're calling this. Are they calling this player gate? Are they calling this roster wrangling? Are they calling this? Tell me here.
I was going to say the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They're a fine team.
Ah, that's nice. That's my good.
My word, the league is really making an example out of these guys. And well, at this point, like you'd think, with all the shenanigans that are going on with the Riders, I mean, if they were 6-1, nobody would be saying boo to them. But the fact that they're 1-6 now, as a result,
it's different though. Remember, a lot of people, especially in Saskatchewan, will look at the Saskatchewan Roughriders as a team that is very similar and as passionate as fans that are passionate as similar to the New England Patriots, who I despise. But the funny thing is, I don't despise Saskatchewan as much. It's just something about Bill Belichick that rubs me the wrong way and that really ticks me off, because he's just the nonchalant meh. Okay, that's what it is, you know. Bob Kraft, and anyways, I'm not here to get in an NFL rant. It makes you wonder. Did he do the exact same thing in Edmonton and nobody noticed it or nobody said anything? I mean, for Bo Levi Mitchell to essentially become the whistleblower, even though the league claimed that they had been already looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it makes you think. Now, you know, all teams are not immune to this type of thing. And we know that the rosters are used to their advantage, especially the one game and the six game roster spots. Boris Beattie is a very good example. You and I both know, and that obviously that was the big stuff that came out last week after we did the show, is that Beattie was summarily benched. But we know he's not hurt. Ego, maybe. His feelings, maybe. You know, that box of ice cream, you know, that's hurt too, because Beattie's feelings are hurt too. That really came out very poorly. but
you can edit that out.
We know he's not hurt. That's the thing. We know he's not hurt. Now, yes, they can come up. It's not like a normal IR in the Arena League or in the NFL, where it has to be for an X period of time. If I remember correctly, I think it's within the CBA agreement that as long as they are, or maybe the rule book, I'm trying to remember which one of the two, as long as they are medically cleared, they can come off at any time.
That's correct.
So the thing was Billy Parker just being put on, which I was very surprised about, only being put on the sick, being put on the six on the sick game, six game. Again, I think it is a cap thing, because you don't have to worry about their roster. You don't got to worry about the roster when they're on the six game. So
that's correct.
It seems everybody tries to find a way around it, but it just so happens Saskatchewan got caught. Now, I think the big surprise to me is that it was only 26 grand and then something else. Because, I mean, it was pretty big what was being claimed, even though it was just a generic, we caught them, you know, some roster violations, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the claiming that they had upwards of 95 people in camp, they were paying for them, paying for housing. It was claiming it was $300 for a player and then $1,000 for a quarterback on the pre-practice squad. I think that was the term that was used online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's indoor football money, not Arena League money. That's indoor football money. What's your thought? I mean, was what they gave him, was it a, and the team, I mean, what, $60,000 and what, 26, only 26,000 that was taken off the salary cap? I think that was it.
Yep.
Such a minor amount. I mean, that's half a player. That's not even half a player spot. No, that is. That's half a player spot.
Yeah. And for a team like Saskatchewan, which is one of the most profitable teams in this league, essentially 80 grand is a drop in the bucket for them. I mean, it's
Yeah, it goes back to a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, being fined $15,000 for the roster violation, the ratio roster violation, which I had thought was against Montreal, but it was the week prior. Mm-hmm. So it's now. I think this is a sort of a softball question. This one, but justified? I think it's a resounding yes. But was it harsh enough?
Definitely not harsh enough. I mean, the whole idea of a punishment is to set a precedent and make it clear that other teams that this sort of behavior is unacceptable. Like you said, you can make the argument that teams find creative ways to explore every single loophole there is. And again, if you can find a way to game the system like that, good on you. Like that's, as far as I'm concerned, that if you're following the rules, then you do what you got to do to make, make yourself a better team. In this case, though, I mean, Saskatchewan, when you're talking about like 95 players on your roster unofficially, that's a pretty egregious number when you're talking about there.
It was 60K. They got fined 60K and it was 26 grand taken off the salary cap. I apologize. Yep. Just wanted to get that straight.
So there you go. So, but again, like for that money, did Saskatchewan get the value for it? And that's how you have to sort of look at it. And I guess only time will tell, because as it stands right now, like again, like I said, if Saskatchewan was 6-1 and we found out about this, perhaps it might be a little bit harsher. Maybe that's the reason why the penalty seems kind of light.
Supposedly the 60 grand was the maximum amount, because I think there were some other CFL insiders that were looking at the way that it was listed, whether it be in the CFL bylaws or in the Constitution, that it could be – I thought it was upwards of $250,000, if I remember the quote properly. So if I got the quote wrong, guys, please send me a nasty email or a mean tweet, okay? But no draft picks? I mean, it seems very, very strange that you don't lose a draft pick.
Well, and again, there's other ways of punishing the team besides – in the pocketbook. I mean, yes, $60,000 is still a fair sum of money, and if that's the max that's allowed, then they got what was coming to them. But like I said, to really set a precedent, to really make the other team sit up and take notice, that was a prime opportunity. And yeah, you could say like, well, why are you piling on Saskatchewan? Because you know they're 1-6 and they're clearly not a very good team. That's beside the point.
Uh-huh.
The idea here is to hold people accountable for their actions. And by not taking away any draft picks, by not suspending Chris Jones' GM duties, for example, or just something, you know, there's something that they could have done to really, really set the tone here. And the league just didn't quite do it. I mean, yeah, they did everything by the book, but I said, for a team like Saskatchewan to be dinged close to 90 grand, yeah, it's gonna hurt a little bit, but not nearly as much as it would for any other team. I mean, at the end of the day, the Riders are still one of the most profitable teams in this league, if not the most profitable team in this league. So hitting them solely in the wallet that's not enough of a punishment. I mean,
yeah. And you talk about the upwards of close to 90 grand. There was another famous one that I had never heard about. And it just seems that I think everybody thought that they were just piling on to the Rough Riders, but it was brought out on Twitter that it was more than just the Rough Riders this year, and in 2014 it occurred a couple times. But this, and we're trying to follow up with some of our insiders to try to find out what this actual definition of this rule is, and if we can get it to you, we'll bring it for you. If we don't get it before we finish up tonight's episode, we'll bring it to you for our next show. But it was a field. What was the term that they were using? It was a field violation.
Yep.
They were fined $5,000 for a field violation,
just for being on the logo.
Yeah, and see, I would love to get some clarity on this.
Yeah, the actual term you're looking for is midfield logo infraction.
Is that what they called it?
That's what it's called.
Midfield logo infraction. Okay.
You won't see this in Montreal because Montreal doesn't have the Alouettes logo at midfield for Percival Molson Stadium, but it is an actual fine. It is an actual infraction.
Yeah, so. But there's still the McGill logo at center field.
I know
I know what you mean. Again, it wasn't just the Alouettes. It wasn't just the Riders who were fined for it. So this is according to Gary Lawless. This is what he said today. And we did reach out to him to see if we could find out some clarity. Same thing with the CFL. media director. So the Riders are actually fined, so this past week, for taking over the midfield logo during the intros versus the Stampeders. You can't go to the home team's logo after intros. Have to go straight to the bench. It's not a new regulation. It's been around for a few years, and Saskatchewan is not the only team fined for the midfield logo infraction in 2016. The Stampeders were also fined. Huh? But also in 2014, the Owls, Eskimos, and Ticats were also fined. And the information that's currently out there, the CFL Constitution, at least the version that I've seen, and the bylaws, at least I completely missed it, didn't see it. So, you know, this coming, and this is probably one of the funniest things, and if we were naming our shows, this is what we would name our show this week. This would be the name of our this episode. You know, this coming from a, which was just pointed out to us this week, point out that a rule in the CFL, it's under fumbles specifically, and they're talking about a type of fumble. They use the word grease pig. I was like, what? First thing, it makes me hungry because I love bacon.
Mm, can't go wrong with bacon.
Bacon
makes better.
But it's so damn funny. I mean, I've seen some quirky rules, but just recently hearing all these quirky terms of rules for penalties, you know, the ratio infraction rule, which I didn't know about. Just go to some of the terminology. If you have a copy of the rule book, the 2016 rule book or 2015, whichever it may be, I think if you need me, I think you could head over to cfldb.ca, a great site, by the way, for a lot of CFL stuff, but they have a copy of the rules book there. And just check out some of the names of the rules, and you'll be, it's, they're head scratchers, they're funny, but I think it's what makes the CFL the CFL, the quirky rules, similar to the Arena League. And the quirky rules, what makes the league. I just wish we could find out more information about this infamous rule. It doesn't make any sense. Is it like in basketball where you have a 3 second lane violation, you know, for either, I think it's offense or defense now in the NBA, mm-hmm. That's the only one, something similar that I could think of that it might be. Or, for those of you who know the Arena League, the jack out of the box, the linebacker out of the box rule in the Arena League.
And then you go to the NFL where they can't seem to get a clear definition as to what a catch is.
Yeah, there you go. That's nice.
I could only imagine if they had similar fines for, and they're not immune to ridiculous fines as well. Like, you got players that get fined because their hair is a certain color, or they're strict.
They're more
socks
strict.
Don't match or yeah, some they're ridiculousness
very,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're very strict in the NFL. It all you got to uniforms. You got to have them tucked in. You got da da da. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'd love to know more. If you happen to know any more information, please contact us. There are multiple ways you can do so. You can email us at alouettespodcast@gmail.com. You can send a message to us over at our Facebook page at Alouettes Flight Deck. You can send us a message on Twitter. That's Alouettes FL Deck. But yeah, I don't, let us know if you happen to find it. I'm just curious to know the definition. It was just one of those weeks, Cliff, one of those weeks where a horrible loss, you know, winnable game, the circus was in town for the CFL, not just in, I don't want to necessarily just keep Saskatchewan in there, but anyways, going forward, hey, we have a game this Friday, don't we? Tough game.
A very tough game. I mean, we've already played Ottawa once this season, and it was not pretty, and I don't expect it to get any prettier having to go now into TV Place, which is one of the most, I'll go ahead and say it, one of the most intimidating places now for a CFL team to play, just because our nation, they're loud, they're very vocal, they're very passionate now. Like, I mean, they've... Call it what you will, but this is a city now that is embracing football, and again, much like their quarterback, feel like they don't get the respect they deserve, and will make it very clear on how they feel about that.
Yeah, it's last time that I was there at Frank Clair, it was Frank Clair. It was when the Renegades were there. I will be there for the first time at the new TD. Was it TD? You said TD Place?
Is TD Place?
Yeah, at TD Place at Frank Clair, I think that's what they're calling unofficially. But it's, yeah. So I'm curious now. I don't know where my seats are yet, but it'll be my first game, my first road game for the Alouettes in quite a long time. So, But yeah, I mean, it's a different quarterback this week, though, coming up, Cliff. It's a different quarterback than what we had previously. Now, I don't know if that's a plus or a minus. I don't know what Hank's all-time record versus Montreal is. I know Steve Daniel has been very busy getting all the pregame stuff ready, but they're not up as of when we're taping our show. But I'd probably have to go back and check now because it wasn't Hank who started the last game. So what do the Owls need to do here in order to win this game? Now, obviously, one of the bigger factors coming up is going to be this coming Wednesday. And if you're listening to the podcast, it's most likely when you're listening to us, when it first gets released, is that there is a happens to be a, for some reason, a long overdue meeting between the CFL and Daron Carter. And if people don't remember what that's about, Cliff, give a quick synopsis on what's happening this Wednesday and why it's happening.
Well, and coincidentally enough, it does involve the Alouettes and the Ottawa Redblacks. This goes back to the home opener a few weeks ago. After Daron Carter had scored a touchdown, he took a wicked headshot, started ambling his way over towards the Ottawa bench, and kind of made a little bit of incidental contact with the head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks, Rick Campbell, who proceeded to fall down in quite the fashion. Let's just leave it at that. And as a result, giant melee ensued. Mm-hmm. And as a result, players were fined, and our man Daron was handed a one-game suspension, which was immediately appealed. And now this appeal is going to be heard. So there's a very good chance, depending on what happens Wednesday.
Days later, too. I don't get that. I don't get that.
Yeah. I mean, you can go back and listen to our archives at alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com just to hear. We've already discussed this at length, so we won't go into it too much. But essentially, when it comes
to... You also check it out, too. If you don't have that, you can check it out at Google Play Music and over at iTunes, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, we won't go into it too much, but essentially what it's coming down to is this Wednesday, Daron's going to get his appeal heard, and we'll find out for sure what's happening as far as when he will serve his one-game suspension.
If he will serve a one-game suspension.
Well, I'd be quite frankly shocked, considering that Ottawa's players got fined for their part in this melee.
As did Daron.
Yes, by the team. That we're talking about the league.
Fine, okay. They could still hand down a fine.
They could, but I just, considering the optics of everything, and I guarantee you this week, that's all you're going to be hearing about, like on sports radio, and I'm sure TSN is going to be all over this as well, even starting on Thursday Night Football. I quite frankly would be stunned if we didn't see this brouhaha played over and over again.
And depending on what the ruling's going to be, yes, they will bring it up, whether he gets suspended or whether he gets acquitted. Really not the right word to use in this case, but that's basically what it is.
Let's say exonerated.
Thank you. There we go. Thank you. Better term. Yes. But it'll be the topic of conversation. I agree with you. It will be the topic of conversation.
And even if the league decides, okay, well, you're still going to have to serve your suspension, but we'll wait till after this game. So, I mean, if Daron Carter walks into TD Place, he will definitely be public enemy number one. And he is going to be walking into a lion's den.
Well, he has something to prove, considering how off his game was last week.
Everybody has a bad day at the office, and unfortunately for Daron, he just couldn't get anything going against the Eskimos. I don't know if that speaks to just how well they were defensively all of a sudden, or if it was just Daron just not, you know, maybe the tirade against Jim Popp, maybe that he kind of took that to heart as well. Mm-hmm. Again, the only person who can answer that question is Daron Carter. I want to believe in my heart of hearts that he is here to play. He's here to show off just how good Daron Carter can be. So I have a very hard time believing that he's just going to take a game off like that and in such fashion. I have to believe if Daron Carter is going to be playing on Friday, he's going to be hyped. He's going to be looking. He is now embracing this bad guy role of his in the CFL. And I guarantee if he's able to play, if he's being allowed to play in this game, I think he's going to crank things up. And just the way that he knows how to do, like he knows how to get under people's skin and he'll get them frothing. And if he can do that, that could actually play into Montreal's favor, because like you said, Ottawa is the most penalized team in the league. if someone's going to try and take an extra pot shot at Duran, or you know, maybe a little cheap shot here or there, and like I said, the refs are going to be watching Duran intensely. So if you do something to Duran, you're going to get caught too. So this could actually work in Montreal's favor as far as maybe getting Ottawa off their game, trying to get their defense rattled a little bit, because maybe they don't know whether to prepare for Carter or prepare without, you know, without seeing him playing. So it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. And as far as Hank goes, I mean, he's got a chip on his shoulder too, and he's certainly taking his lumps now online and in the media as well. So he's going to be coming out with something to prove, because he's actually doubled down on his comments. Like, he doesn't feel the need to apologize. I thought that maybe after some time, once he sort of realized, you know, the firestorm that happened afterwards, maybe he would have said, you know what, maybe I should have dialed it back a little bit. No, he's sticking to what he has to say. And hey, if that's truly how you feel, Hank, then good on you for it. I definitely give you props for that. But you got to know that everybody's going to be watching Henry Burris as well. And if he falters at any point, it's going to get ugly in Ottawa. And again, Montreal is the kind of defense that can capitalize on someone like Henry Burris. Just if he's having an off day, this defense will take full advantage of that.
Anybody who, you know, I know we don't do the fantasy and the fantasy and the stuff like that here at the flight deck. But I can tell you that Five Dimes Cliffy currently has the Alouettes game at an Ottawa favorite at a -9 with an over under of 49 points. To be fair, it seems to be a fair assessment. Looking at the other games this week, yeah, even Saskatchewan's they're the underdog too by 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
So very fair. Also, mm-hmm. Any of you who, so I'm trying to go over here real quickly to the other one if it's available, to let you guys know. Let's see here. On Massey ratings, they have Ottawa favorite at 7.5 points with an over under of 43.5, and they have Ottawa at winning at a 71% clip. So it's fair, but it's just the league is, there's so much parity that we know anything can happen, even though that we know that the road team has been very dominant this year. They had to play almost a perfect game. You know, Kevin Glenn has to go without an INT. He needs to be a lot more careful inside the red zone. But it makes you wonder, Cliff, that maybe if they switch things around, if they start getting in there within the 10, try something. Try a little trickery. Try going to the run inside the 10. Try a little option pass. Don't force something in there. Try something to be able to score. You need to score. You can't always go to DeRon Carter for the long bomb or to BJ Cunningham.
No, and again, this is, again, another hallmark of an Anthony Calvillo-led offense. He's always looking. He was like that as a player, too, always looking for the big play. And sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. And I say more often than not, you're not going to get that big play. At the end of the day, just move the chains. I mean, whether you do it on the ground or with, again, Lord knows this team loves its it's screen passes, and you know, whatever it takes to move the ball down the field 10 yards at a time, then do it. That's really what it's going to take. And
right.
Ottawa's going to be ready for it. I mean, their defense hasn't looked absolutely spectacular. They had a bit of a 2-game losing streak as well. I mean, they lost to the Riders, for crying out loud. So, I mean,
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Anything can happen. And they had to fight and scratch their way to get that victory against the Eskimos 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, like this, I'm not saying they're a completely beatable team, but the fact that if you play your game, you work your plan properly. And I think the big thing, too, is this defense is going to get tested. I mean, you've got, like I said, some great receivers in Ottawa, like Brad Sinopoli, Greg Ellingson, Chris Williams. I mean, these are guys that have lit up the Alouettes in the past and will be looking to do so again this Friday.
Right.
So, I mean, if you got to find a way, especially with these young, this young secondary, if they can just find a way, just like I said, play tight and just stay on your man, but don't just keep the penalties, the holdings, illegal contact. These are the penalties that are just absolute gut punches. So you got to find a way to just play your game, play hard, cover fast, and just keep it clean. That's all there is to it, because you do not want to give Hank a chance to establish any sort of rhythm. If you can get in his kitchen and start messing with him a little bit, that's going to be very helpful. But Hank knows how to win. And again, he brought this team to the Grey Cup last year. He was the most defending, most outstanding player, whether it's deserved or not. Again, anyone can argue that. But at the end of the day, he's got the hardware to back up everything he says. So
just don't.
And now he's got a major chip on his shoulder with this this whole brouhaha with himself versus the commentators on CFL at TSN. So he'll be looking to prove himself out there.
Yeah, he'll be looking to prove himself. But I think if the team can, as I said, defense, play the way you're doing, but the offense needs to play with the same intensity and focus. And, you know, we don't have Billy Parker again this week. We don't have who else was out on special teams? Who got to names this game? The guy who broke his leg.
It wasn't special teams, but on defense.
Oh, sorry, special teams.
Michael Klassen, who unfortunately got rolled up on by Von Martin last game in Edmonton. And
yeah, for some reason I thought it was on a special teams play, but you're right.
It was on a special teams play.
Oh,
but
was it?
Again,
okay.
But Michael is one of our defensive standouts.
Right. No, I know. As I said, okay. So I'm right and I'm wrong.
Yes, you are. That's pretty impressive.
There you go. Yes, you are, Tim. Yes. Yeah, just don't. And let's see if we can establish the running game again. You know, something, you know.
Well, and the thing, like, a guy who always seems to really play well in Ottawa, and maybe it's just because it's so close to home, J.C. Beaulieu. The guy's a dual threat. Mm-hmm. He can run, yeah, and he can catch. Yeah. And the last couple times he's played in Ottawa, he's played very well. And I don't think Ottawa is necessarily ready for someone who plays in sort of a tight end formation like what J.C. Beaulieu does. And if I'm Kevin Glenn, if I'm Anthony Calvillo, Jacques Chaplain, and Kevin Glenn, I'm finding a way to get J.C. Beaulieu as many touches as possible, because one, they won't be expecting it, and two, the guy's a dual threat. So yeah, if you need him to catch a pass, he can do that. If you just want to hand him the rock, he'll plow through and get 7-8 yards easy enough. Like you said, keeping it on the ground is not necessarily a bad strategy, because you got Brandon Rutley, who we know he can run. He's had a couple of drops, or not drops, but fumbles. And again, everybody's go through that. But if you just sort of vary it up and just have like almost like a two-back system with these guys, with both Beaulieu and Rutley, just keep Ottawa guessing. Because if they're preparing for one and you give them the other, I mean, that opens things up. And worst case scenario, Ottawa starts planning for the run, that opens up all the receivers again.
Right.
And again, you've also got Sam Giguère, who, like I said, should not really be a receiver, but his speed on the ground is fantastic. Find a way to make the, you know, fly sweep the heck out of this guy if you have to. I mean, this seems to be the bread and butter for the Alouettes offense year after year, is using the bloody fly sweep. So you may as well just take Giguère and put him to work with that.
Right.
Because, I mean, last game notwithstanding, he's just not really much of a pass catcher. But the guy's an athletic freak. He runs like the wind. Put that to use. Just run the crap out of the Red Blacks.
Right.
It's not a terrible strategy.
No, I know. So it will be an interesting game. I hope to have fun. I don't know where I'm sitting yet, but I hope to have fun there. It'll be interesting. I do know that the game is already sold out, as they have promoted it on social media already. So it should be fun. It should be fun to say, and I'm hoping for a good game, because, yeah, you know, going all that way and having a crap game, well, I know it happens from time to time, but not while I'm in attendance, damn it. Not while I'm in attendance.
Well, and the nice thing, too, is because of the proximity of Montreal to Ottawa, there will be a lot of Alouettes fans there. So, I mean, I really hope these guys know that they're not going to be as alone as they think. Alouettes Nation is going to be in the house. I mean, it may not be as loud as our nation, but, you know, Alouettes fans, they travel well, and they're going to bring the fun as well. They're going to be tailgating. They're going to be there having a good time. All they ask is just give a good effort. Put your best foot forward for this team. I mean, what more can you ask for, really?
Yeah, again, it should be. I'm hoping for a good game. That's all I can ask for. And as I said, I'm just hoping for the perfect game. Let's pull off an upset. Let's do what the road teams have been doing all year, let's get that win. Let's get that third win of the season, and let's start proving that we are a team to be reckoned with for the rest of the season. So, So, Cliff, I will talk to you soon. Again, if there are any other questions, please email us and or contact us via social media, and we'll try to get you try to answer back as quickly as possible. So for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off.